So that's great. Today we're beginning a new sermon series following the life of Simon Peter. And as you'll discover over the next few weeks, Peter was a really colourful, larger-than-life character. Fisherman from Galilee, or Gennesaret as our reading described it. And he became one of Jesus' first disciples and ultimately the leader of the Christian church. Well, my first introduction to fishing came when I was a young girl on holiday in the far north of Scotland. And my dad and my older brother would set off early most mornings and sometimes in the evening too with their rods to fish for trout in the local streams. And they weren't always successful, but more often or not, they'd return home with catch. And my aunt would clean and cook the fish and we'd eat it fresh from the river into the pan and onto the plate. It was absolutely wonderful. And I felt a bit left out from these adventures that they had and persuaded them to let me come too. But I didn't realise that fishing begins with going and digging for worms in the garden to use as bait. And they looked really big and wriggly and rather nasty to fit on the hook. And I thought, what on earth am I supposed to do? Tie them on like a knot or something? And my brother, who wasn't very nice, this is my oldest brother, but bless him. He's nice now, I should say, just in case he turns on and listens to this sermon. He's really nice now. William, you're really nice. He rather gleefully told me that in order to use these worms, I had to bite pieces off them and put the pieces of bitten worm on the hook. Yeech! How absolutely disgusting. But of course, I wasn't ready to admit defeat. I insisted on going with them, and when we arrived down at the trout stream, I disappeared upstream as well away from them as I could possibly go. And I opened the jar and looked at these worms who really were, I mean, they were worms. I didn't like worms. I didn't want to go near these worms. I couldn't bear to touch them, let alone bite through them. So I let them all go. I tipped them out. I then sat there for ages, for what I thought was a suitable length of time. And then I returned. Have you caught anything? No, I replied. But I had lots of bites, but they all got away. How much bait have you got left? Oh, the fish were really hungry, I said. They ate everything. And of course, my dad and my brother saw through my story. They probably had a real laugh later on at my expense, and I never went out with them again. Seriously, though, fishing is a tough and it's an unpredictable job, whether you're off the north coast of Scotland or whether you're on the Sea of Galilee. And here, fishing would happen mostly at night when the fish came out of hiding and were generally more active than in the heat of the day. The linen nets that the fishermen used wouldn't be quite so visible. And there were two main methods of fishing, and the first used a circular net with weights attached around the edge. And it also had a long cord in the middle of the net, and the fisherman would stand on the edge of the boat or the shore. He'd flip the net out in a sort of particular motion so that the net spread out in a big circle, and then the weights would cause it to drop into the water, and it would the weights would fall down, and the net would become a sort of cone shape. And as it went down, it trapped the fish, and then the weights all kind of held together. And if he pulled the net up very gently and carefully, the fish would be trapped inside and they wouldn't be able to escape. And when I was in Galilee, I saw this particular method demonstrated, this guy on the front of the boat with his net. But of course, because it was broad daylight, the fish were nowhere to be seen and he didn't catch anything. And the second method that they used was to take two boats out and tie a net between them like a dragnet, and they'd go into deep water, spread the net out between them, and then slowly move towards the shore, dragging the net along the bottom as they went. And the net would be a bit like a sieve. It would trap the fish until they finally pulled up. And this is likely to be what Peter had been doing with his companions, because Luke very clearly tells us that there were two boats. So this was probably what they'd been doing. Both methods involved long hours of hard physical labour. And once on shore, their work wasn't finished, because the fish had to be cleaned and sold, the nets had to be repaired, sticks Stones and other debris all had to be removed, and these would make small tears in the net, and these had to be mended, because if they were left, obviously the tears would just get bigger and bigger, and then the nets would be useless because the fish would be able to escape. And then the nets, because they were linen, old linen nets, had to be spread out and stretched to dry, because otherwise they would dry in the wrong shape. And this took hours, and this was after they'd been out all night fishing, and only when they'd finally got it all done could they go home and sleep for a few hours before getting up at dusk to repeat the whole process again. So you can imagine, on this particular morning, Simon, Peter and his companions had worked all night and they'd caught nothing. So they would have been frustrated as well as exhausted. No fish, no money. And they still had to sort out their nets for the next night. And as they're working, Jesus comes into sight, and a crowd quickly gathers around him to listen to him. And there wasn't really enough space on the edge of the shore to accommodate them all. They all wanted to get close to Jesus, and Jesus knew that he had to do something to satisfy the crowd, but also he needed to be heard. And it was all, I mean, health and safety would have had a field day. You know, too many people on the edge of the shore, there's going to be an accident or something. And Jesus is really resourceful. He commandeers one of Peter's boats and takes it out onto the water. And sound carries amazingly over water. I don't know if you've ever been in a boat and said something to somebody on the shore, but actually the noise is amplified by the water. And Galilee has got lots of little natural inlets which make natural amphitheatres. So everybody would have been on the shore. They could have seen Jesus. They could have heard him perfectly. And the fishermen would have been listening as well, whether they liked it or not. They were there mending their nets. They had to finish doing their nets, so they couldn't leave until they had finished preparing them. And I just wonder what Peter was thinking. He might have been thinking, oh, Jesus, just stop talking, you know, so that I can pull my boat back on shore and go home for my breakfast. I'm really exhausted. We don't know what he was thinking. But suddenly his train of thought was interrupted because Jesus commands him, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Well, how ridiculous was that? Because it was broad daylight, it was getting hotter by the minute. They hadn't had any success during the night. Why would they catch something now? It was total madness. Even I know that. Because despite my somewhat negative experience of the joys of fishing when I was a child, I once took my children to a trout farm in Bybury in the Cotswolds. And they were so excited. And there were lots of other people standing along the bank in the sunshine with their rods fishing. But they weren't catching anything. It was a really sunny day. And I remembered the advice that my dad had given me all those years ago. And we headed for the shade. So it shows that I had been listening, even if I didn't want to bite the worms into little pieces. I had actually been listening to him. And I said to the children, drop your line over there, under the trees where the water is deep and dark, because I said, that's where the fish will be. And to their amazement, Greg and Sarah caught 5 fish in as many minutes. And if all these adults on the bank were sort of watching these little ones and thinking, what have they got that we haven't got? Because they were just putting the rod in and the fish were biting and they pulled them out and then they did it again. It was an amazing time. And I had to stop them because, of course, we had to pay for each fish that we caught. And it was beginning to get expensive because you paid by the weight of the fish. But we had a really impressive supper at my parents' house, and Grandpa, who had, you know, was a great fisherman, was really, really impressed by it all. So if I know that midday in the sunshine isn't the best time for fishing, Peter certainly knew it. And moreover, of course, if they put their nets back in the water, they'd only have to repeat the arduous process of cleaning them, stretching them, mending them, all over again, so they'd lose even more of their rest that they desperately needed. Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. In other words, master, we're exhausted. What are you thinking of? But actually, the word master is key here, because despite Peter's reservations, because he was the experienced fisherman, and Jesus certainly wasn't an experienced fisherman, he recognizes Jesus' authority. He calls him master. It's not Jesus, it's master. And then he says, because you say so, I will let down the nets. And Peter obeyed without knowing what was going to happen next. He had no idea what Jesus was going to do. And sometimes God asks us to obey him, but we don't always know what's going to happen. We have the choice to obey or not, but we don't know. And Peter certainly didn't know. But of course, we know the story. The nets suddenly filled with fish so that they began to break, and the other boat rushed over to help them. And there were so many fish that the boats were almost sinking. And you would have thought at this point that all of Peter's attention would have been on the fish. After all, a catch like this was beyond their wildest dreams. It was a bit like, first century AD equivalent of winning the lottery. More fish than they'd ever caught in their life or would ever catch again. And the text actually says he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they'd taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. I mean, it was the fishing story to end all fishing stories, wasn't it? And they say fishermen tend to exaggerate their catch. You know, the fish are always longer and bigger and heavier, and you always catch a few more of them than you might admit to. But would anybody believe them in the years to come when they said, you'll never believe what happened when we were with Jesus and he told us to let the nets down? There were so many fish. But instead of looking at the fish, Peter's eyes are riveted on Jesus. And his response is surprising, because rather than thanking Jesus for the miracle, he falls on his knees and begs Jesus, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. And it's as if Peter suddenly sees Jesus clearly again. He sees God in Jesus, and he recognizes that Jesus isn't just an ordinary rabbi. This is something different. This is something extraordinary. This is something powerful. And he calls him Lord. He calls him Lord, not teacher. And it's as if Peter realizes, if I can see Jesus clearly, Jesus can see me clearly too. And Peter felt totally exposed in the presence of God's awesome power. His life was laid bare. It was all too much for him. And I had an experience of this sort shortly before I became a follower of Jesus. I didn't think I needed what I referred to as this religion business. And my life was trundling along quite happily, thank you very much. But at the age of 18, I got invited to go on a church holiday camp. And I was asked to take a Bible and notebook with me. Good grief. What sort of holiday was that going to be? The only reason I went was because, I think this is God's sense of humour, the holiday camp was in the west coast of Scotland, and I just adore Scotland, and I was going to be up there anyway with my parents on holiday, so it was an easy journey for me to get there. So even though I was sort of beginning to have a few doubts about what I was letting myself in for, I decided I'd see what it was all about. And actually, I found I was in a group of great people. And they weren't all Christians. About half the group was Christian and the other half weren't. And this made for some very interesting discussions. And we were working on a youth centre, so we were going out during the day, getting extremely grubby, digging sewage trenches and laying pipes for this youth centre, helping to gather big boulders and move them into place to make a jetty and that sort of thing. They really worked as hard. But then in the evening, we'd have discussion groups and look at the Bible, and they'd show little film strips and things. And I thought, well, I'll play devil's advocate. I'll just challenge everything they say. Whatever they say, I've got an argument. I can be better than them. I can beat them at this. They're not going to convince me. Actually, ironically, it wasn't their arguments that won me over, although I found them increasingly irresistible. But what it was their genuine love for me, as well as their genuine love for each other. There was a real bond amongst these Christians that I could see, and it was as if they shared something very special. So they didn't need to... You know how when you meet somebody and you always sort of say to them things like, oh, what do you do? Where do you live? We want to get information about them so that we can then connect with them and make sort of a relationship with them. And it was as if they didn't have to do that. That was all, that wasn't necessary. They just had this connection. And of course, afterwards, I realized the connection was Jesus. So they were just instantly a bonded group because they shared Jesus. That was what they shared. As well as being genuinely caring about everybody in the group, whether they believed or didn't believe, they were really interested, genuinely interested in who I was. I felt that actually they were really interested in who I really was. I didn't have to pretend to be somebody different. I didn't have to try and impress them. I felt that when they listened to what I said, they were attentively listening to me. And there's something about somebody really listening to you that's very profound. I felt as if I was truly known in a way that I hadn't felt known or respected or believed in before. It was very attractive. It was slightly scary, but it was good. But I couldn't relate to what they said about sin because I didn't see myself as a bad person. You know, I did the usual, well, I've never murdered somebody business, you know. How many of us have murdered somebody? But, you know, it's what you always say, you know, well, I'm not an axe murderer. I'm not a sinner. And you don't seem to realise that there are lots of ways to sin without going as far as being an axe murderer. And then a few days later, we were walking back to the centre, and it was a glorious sunny day. And this is where I was, the Summer Isles off the west coast of Scotland, and the hills in the background are the hills of Skye. And it's just the most beautiful part of God's world, or one of them, but, you know, I'm biased. And the sea was spread out in front of me, and I was on this cliff path. And I was just suddenly and totally overwhelmed by a sense of the holiness of God. And I don't know what triggered it. I don't know how it happened. I can't explain it. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. But I knew he was all around me in the beauty of creation. And I knew he was so beautiful. And I knew he was so amazing and so awesome. And I stood there on that path, and I just felt really grubby. I mean, I was grubby. I was filthy. I'd been digging sewage ditches. You know, outside I was grubby, and that was quite reasonable grubbiness. But what it was that I felt really grubby on the inside. And completely unbidden, I got all these memories of things that I'd said, things that I'd thought, things that I'd done, just began to flash through my mind. And I can remember standing there thinking, so this is sin. And I really wanted to hide, but actually there was nowhere to go. You know, it was a very narrow path and we were all walking along. Come on, Fiona, you know, what are you stopping for? You know, people behind me had no idea I was having this kind of epiphany moment sort of with God, you know. And I just thought, I just want to hide. I just felt as if God could really see me clearly, and actually, I didn't like what he saw. That was the thing. It wasn't that I thought God doesn't like what he sees. I knew that I didn't like what God saw. It was as if all the secret, nasty stuff was suddenly laid bare before him. And it also made me realize, too, that this God stuff is very real. It's very powerful. And it's very important. And I couldn't ignore it. And actually, I think that was what happened to Peter in that boat. He suddenly realized this God stuff is real, it's powerful, it's important. And he couldn't ignore it. And also, seeing Jesus clearly kind of exposed who he really was. And that moment when the net spilled over with fish, his life changed forever. And Peter had a choice, because he could have taken the fish and banked the money, as it were. His life would have been different from then on, because he'd have had more money in the bank. I don't know if they had banks. They probably had little earthenware jars that they filled with gold coins and buried somewhere. But he would have had more earthenware jars of gold coins than he could ever need. He might have gone out on the occasional fishing trip, but, you know, he probably wouldn't have needed to, frankly. But his life would have been the same old, same old. Oh, yeah, I'll join you in the boat. I don't need to, but... And he would have had the occasional good catch, but nothing to match that day that he would always remember and then say, I wonder what might have happened if I'd only been brave enough to follow my heart. Or Peter could follow his heart, because that day he'd got a glimpse of how life could be following Jesus. It was as if that glimpse had taken hold of him. And Jesus knows what's flashing through Peter's mind. He knows he's not sure. And he says, don't be afraid. From now on, you'll catch men. And Peter probably couldn't imagine where following Jesus was going to lead him. All he knew was that he had to do it. And you'll discover later, Peter's a very impetuous character. He tended to just respond. You know, he didn't always think things through as carefully as he might have done. But they just pulled their boats up on shore and left everything, and they followed Jesus. When Jesus looked at Peter, Jesus could see the man that God had destined him to be. Yes, he could see Peter's faults. Jesus knew perfectly well what the weaknesses were in Peter's character. But he knew that those could be dealt with. Jesus knew that Peter had the capacity to lead other men. He knew he would work well as part of a team. He knew that he'd persevere through hardship and through exhaustion. He was the rock on which his church would be built. Well, what about us? Jesus knows everything about our lives too. Every thought, every disappointment, every hope, every dream. That can seem rather scary, because we're very good at disguising who we are. We're very good at disguising what we think we are, our faults and our failings. But just as Jesus knew what Peter could become if he chose to follow him, he also knows who we can become when we choose to follow him. I have dreams for my children, just as my parents had dreams for me. And I think my dreams for my children are good ones. But I don't know my children as well as God knows them. We don't know ourselves as well as he does. Only God really understands what we're all capable of. And he's got such an imagination, such a vision for us that's truly beyond our dreams. And it won't always be easy. Peter's life had its moments. It wasn't always easy for him. But he discovered that following Jesus was real and satisfying in a way that nothing else could match. And like Peter, we'll occasionally catch a glimpse of something extraordinary that takes hold of us. That day on the boat was something that Peter would never forget. It grabbed him from that moment and it never let him go. And as you'll hear over these next weeks, Peter's life didn't sort of continue in a sort of golden haze from that moment. He certainly had his moments, but he wouldn't have changed his decision to follow Jesus for a moment. Many of you know that my life hasn't always been easy. I've experienced great joys, but I've also known great sorrow. But I've also been given many unexpected opportunities, like being able to get ordained and serving as curate here. And that certainly wasn't on my radar all those years ago. And despite the ups and downs, and despite the moments when I've sort of fallen away a bit and drifted and then come back, I'd never change my choice to follow Jesus, because I've also seen a glimpse of what God wants for me and I don't want to stop until I get there. And I'm going to close with some words from Paul's letter to the Philippians, reading from the Message version of the Bible. I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I have it made, but I am well on my way, reaching out for Christ, who has so wondrously reached out for me. Friends, don't get me wrong. By no means do I count myself an expert in all of this, but I've got my eye on the goal, where God is beckoning us onward to Jesus. I'm off and running, and I'm not turning back. Can I invite you to stand? And I'm just going to pray. And as I pray, if there's something that I say that just matches where you are and what you're thinking, just say yes to God in your heart. Father, thank you so much for Jesus. Thank you that you see us and you are amazed. You love each one of us so much. We're filled with so much potential. You have such imagination for us and such passion for us. And Father, today I want to say yes again to you. I want to say yes to your call to follow you. And Father, forgive me if I've drifted, if I've let things slip, if I've forgotten what you caught hold of me for, if I've forgotten that I belong to you and you belong to me, and truly that's the best thing in the world. So Father, today I say yes to you again. And I ask you, please, Jesus, to come by your Holy Spirit and fill me afresh with the excitement and joy of following you. Fill me afresh with the courage to follow you. And Lord, you know all my dreams, all my disappointments, all my failings. You know everything about me. And Father, I just pray that if I'm carrying things on my back that are weighing me down and stopping me from following you, I just want to leave them at your feet so that I can walk free and follow you wherever you take me. In Jesus' name, amen. We're going to sing our final.